This is the Evil Never Dies podcast midweek show. Keep it evil, everyone.
The Evil Never Dies podcast.
We are the girls from the Unfreaking Believable podcast. I'm Betsy.
I'm author JB Kane, but you can call me Jen.
And I'm Jenny.
And twice a month, we will bring you guests, authors, actors, and everyday heroes who are going to share their moments with you that made a difference in their lives.
And it's all because of that one inciting incident. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, and Audible. You can also follow us on Instagram or TikTok. And you can visit our website at www.ufbpodcast.com.
We believe that life is infinitely stranger than fiction, stranger than anything the mind can invent. You might even say, it's unfreaking believable.
Welcome, everybody, to the Evil Never Dies midweek episode. I'm your host this week, Carl Todd. Brett is somewhere. I don't know where. But if you listen to the Sunday show, I talked for almost an hour and a half about Motley Crue, in particular the 1994 album that featured John Corabi. Now, at the end of the show, I started to talk about Generation Swine, but I didn't get into a lot of details on it. So I kind of wanted to come back and finish that up. And trust me, this is not going to be an hour and a half. This is going to be a short episode. I just felt like I left things hanging. So I wanted to go ahead and finish the story, as Cody Rhodes would say. So where we last left off, Personality Number 9 was going to be the name of the album. John Corabi, Tommy Lee, Nikki Sixx, and Mick Mars were in the studio. And now, this thing was in many studios. It was in like five or six different studios they recorded. And yeah. So, as we said, Elektra Records was frustrated at the fact they didn't sell records like they did on Dr. Feelgood, not noting or not realizing that it wasn't 1989 anymore. So Elektra wanted to get rid of Corabi and bring Vince back. There was a lot of things going on. They decided to fire Bob Rock because they thought he overproduced them. They fired manager Doug Thayer and hired Alan Kovac, who was a manager that had a reputation for restoring the failed careers of veteran rock artists as well as addicts. So they went ahead and, they hired Scott Humphries, who had helped, engineer the 94 album, to be the new producer. So, as we said, there was a mass firing at Elektra Records. Doug Morris was discussing the crew's future at the label and tried to convince Sixx and Lee to get rid of Corabi because he wasn't a star. They were still not interested, and they continued working on the album with John Corabi. Now, I don't know exactly how far along it got with Corabi, but I've heard, not actually heard, but I've heard rumors that there are recordings with Corabi singing a majority of the songs on the album. So, I don't know. I just know there was a lot of back and forth. Corabi was getting fed up. Mick Mars was getting fed up. And the new CEO of Elektra Records, I guess, finally convinced them to bring Vince back. But he still wasn't really back. So, they intended to record a more aggressive album than the Motley Crue album. I guess they were going to try to get heavier. Well, it didn't work that way. The band was really excited about the prospects of personality number nine. Karabi said at the end of the day, they were happy because the music rocked so hard. So as we said, Bob Rock got fired. Everything was just disorganized. Scott Humphries was not a very experienced producer. And Tommy and Nikki decided they were going to co-produce. And they kept arguing about the sound. So Mick kept getting downgraded. And I guess him and Scott Humphries almost had a feud going on. John Corabi kept getting more and more flustered and upset. Said he would learn the material only to find it changed when he came back to the studio. So Mick Mars and John Corabi both say that Mick was not really a part of the sessions at all. Virtually all of his contributions were discarded at some point. So talk of unnamed session artist, John Corabi himself playing guitar. Mick has said that this is his only the only album that he regrets is Generation Swine. And Karabi says they had no respect for Mick and it was bullshit. So as the recording continued, more pressure to bring Vince back. And I guess they finally sit Karabi down and said, look, yeah, Vince is coming back, but you're not really going anywhere yet. Keep coming to the studio. So yes, we had both John Karabi and Mick Mars and Vince Neil and Tommy Lee and Nikki Sixx all in the middle of this album. The five semi-members of Motley Crue in the case of Mick Mars and John Corabi, and even poor Vince, because Vince just came in. It was already written. So this album did not fit Vince's vocal style, but he did a damn good job on it. And supposedly John Corabi was helping him sing some of the songs and show him the ropes. Karabi was a team player for this. He was still playing guitar. And then, like I said on the last podcast, there was rumors that they were going to keep John Karabi as their guitar player and dump Mick. Well, like I said before, eventually Karabi just sort of said, screw it, and disappeared. So it was back to the original Motley Crue, if you want to call it that at this stage. So the heavy, hard album that they promised started to fade away, and the crew started experimenting with more trendy stuff like electric music and alternative rock and sort of Cheap Tricky sounding, which is funny because actually had Cheap Trick open the tour. Some of this stuff almost sounds like David Bowie. It's really an eccentric, weird album. Again, Vince does a fucking outstanding job for what he's got to work with. It's not his vocal style, but they made it work in the studio. So it was definitely, even with Vince back, a departure from your traditional Motley Crue album. They even had Nikki and Tommy singing on lead vocals on several songs, which was really strange. The first song on the album, which was called Find Myself, actually starts out with Nikki singing or talking or growling or grunting or somethinging before Vince ever sings, which I thought was sort of cool in a way because, you know, it's kind of like, wait, guess what? Vince isn't just back. Oh, there's Vince. He is back. I don't know. It kind of worked. And, you know, everybody knows I love John Corabi, but I was sort of excited that Motley were getting back together with Vince at this stage because it was obvious it wasn't going to work with Karabi with the labels and everything. So I was curious to see what this thing was going to sound like. Lyrically, the songs are just, they're sort of anti-suicide, depressive, some songs about depression, definitely some drugs, prostitution, and the worst song ever recorded. Tommy Lee writes a song about his young son, Brandon. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a bit. So, let's do the track list on this album. Track one, Find Myself, which was about 2 minutes and 50 seconds. It was a short song. I don't know what this song's about, really. It's the one that starts with Nikki singing or talking. I'm a sick motherfucker is part of the lyrics. Ain't no one tougher. I don't know. It's a groovy sort of song. It's definitely weird. The second song, which was also the lead single, was called Afraid. Let's talk about Afraid for a second. It was the first single. The video featured the Hustler publisher, Larry Flint, who had put the band on a cover of Hustler that year. So I guess they sort of, hey, you know. There was a movie out about Larry Flint around that time, too. So I guess he'd sort of generated some interest. It did reach number 10 on the mainstream rock charts, but it wasn't nearly as exciting as people would have thought. But I remember hearing this song on KEGL while driving to Scarborough Fair, which is our local Renaissance festival. And when I heard it, I'm like, that sounds more like a John Corabi song. That doesn't sound like a Vince Neil song. Well, I was right, I guess. He did good doing, it was weird. Vince was now basically mocking John's voice, so I don't know. So back to the track list. Track 4, Generation Swine, which was the name of the album. I don't really know. I mean, it's not a bad song. It's just hard to describe. Most of these songs sound less like Motley Crue than anything off the John Corabi album to me. Not a bad song. I think we missed actually the song Flush. That was actually track 3. I skipped Flush. And I like Flush. It's a very dark, depressing song, and it's actually credited to John Corabi as being a co-writer of it. Vocals are very kind of distorted. Great song. I mean, I was into this damn, you know, trying to experiment at this stage, and this song, it worked. I like the song Flush a lot. I still listen to it. But again, very, very Corabi-like, and he got credit for writing. Confessions, this is sort of an anti-depression song. Actually, yeah, it's a Tommy Lee song, too. He wrote the lyrics. Song 6 is Beauty, which was about a prostitute, Black Beauty. That was her name. Typical Crue lyrics, at least. Song 7 was Glitter, which was co-authored with Bryan Adams. Yeah, that Bryan Adams. It is a ballad. It's a very piano-y ballad, but it's not like Home Sweet Home. This is the one that sounds sort of David Bowie-ish in nature to me. Again, it's an experiment. I don't hate it. I can't talk bad about it. It was different, but people just really wasn't into different, I guess, at this time. I don't know, man. They wanted Vince back. They got Vince back. They didn't like the results. Glitter's not a bad song. Track 8, Anybody Out There? That's just another weird Tommy Lee song. Fuck, I don't know, man. Tommy should have never been doing anything like this. Track 9 was called Let Us Pray, which was also credited to John Corabi. And if you ever wanted to hear what Vince Neil would sound like singing a John Corabi song, this is it, because Vince actually sounds sort of like John Corabi on the song. It sort of works, man, you know? It sort of works. This is definitely a flip of an album. Track 10 was Rocket Ship, was some kind of spoken words by Nikki Sixx. Yeah, I don't know, man. Track 11 is sort of a refresher, and it's called A Rat Like Me. And this song actually, for the first time since Generation Swine, I mean, since Dr. Feelgood, and the only one on Generation Swine is what I was trying to say, Rat Like Me sounds like fucking Motley Crue. It's actually a Crue song, and it's a good song. I think they probably did write this after Vince came back. It definitely doesn't have the feel of the rest of the album. Definitely sort of a standout. Track 12 was Shout at the Devil 97. It was an updated version of Shout at the Devil using more modern alternative rock metal styles. And the Crue would actually play this version in concert for a few years after the record came out. Doesn't suck. So, sort of indifferent. Track 13 is Brandon, which Tommy Lee performs, wrote, and it's horrific. This has to be probably the worst thing that Motley Crue ever recorded in their entire history. It had no place on a Motley Crue album. It had no place on any album. This song is pathetic. It should have flunked the whole album, but fuck, man. I don't know. This is an experiment that failed for the most part. There's some good parts, but this is the bottom of the barrel. Now, there was a Japanese track called A Song to Slit Your Wrist By. I don't think I've ever heard this damn song. I don't think I'm missing anything. We did have a 2003 remaster bonus track, which featured a different mix of Afraid, which sounds more alternative rock than the original. Track 15 was called Wreck Me. So, it sounds more punk rock. A lot of bumpy bass on it, which I don't know if Nikki actually played. Vince actually gets co-credited for some lyrics on this one. Track 17 was Rocket Ship, which was an early demo. And this is better. This is a little better. I don't know. Not much. Kiss the Sky next. This is the song that's credited to Tommy Lee, Vince Neil, Mick Mars, Nikki Sixx, John Corabi on lyrics and music. So I don't know how the hell they put this thing together with all five of them, but they did. And it's actually a cool fucking song. It's sort of a, I don't know, it's sort of a laid back kind of hippie-ish song. It should have probably been on the album as a release track. Fuck, I don't know, man. Then we had Confessions, which was a demo with Tommy Lee on vocals. It sucks. And I think the CD actually had the video for Afraid back when they had CDRs or whatever they called them. So the personnel, let's go over who actually performed on this album. Well, according to the liner notes, Vince Neil lead vocals on all tracks but Rocket Ship and Brandon. And I think the spoken song that Nikki did, I don't know, man. Mick Mars supposedly on lead guitar and backing vocals, but apparently that was not the case. Nikki Sixx claims to be on bass, backing vocals. They call this lead vocals on that Rocket Ship, additional vocals on Find Myself and production. Tommy Lee, drums, piano, backing vocals, lead vocals on Brandon, additional vocals on Confessions, and that song Beauty about the prostitute and producer. Tommy had his damn nose way too far in this album, and I think that's part of why it did not work. Tommy was not a great songwriter. He's still not a good songwriter. He's a damn good drummer. He's not a producer, and he sure ain't a fucking lyricist either. Yeah. Sorry, Tommy. Additional quote-unquote personnel. Guess who? That's right. Mr. John Corabi. He's credited with guitars, rhythm guitars, backing vocals, and that's it. And credits for two songs. Somebody named David Darling was credited with rhythm guitar. There's some people with string arrangements, I guess, on Glitter. We're not going to get into all them. Scott Humphries did synthesizers, computer programming, backup vocals, and the main producer. Gunner Sixx, additional vocals, that's Nikki's son, on Find Myself, which at the end, there's a kid saying, Destruction! So, kind of cute, I guess. And yeah, Cheap Trick, Rick Nelson and Robin Zander on backing vocals on Glitter. I still say it sounds more like David Bowie than Cheap Trick. They had other assistants and programmers and everything you could think of on this album. Yeah, they had a photographer. So where the hell did I do with the album? It fell on the floor. Maybe that's where it belongs. Well, the first thing about this that's weird, it was printed backwards. This is actually the back, and it's like a Japanese book. It opens up the wrong direction. So we got lyrics. That's about the vibe they were feeling right there, I think, with the yellow. So got all the lyrics, some really freaky pictures. And there's the cover. Whoops. It's them wearing pig mask. How inventive, huh? The back's just a picture of the return to Motley Crue and Nikki not wearing shoes. And Vince had short blonde hair there. When I saw him, he had red hair. He would have dyed his hair red. Yeah, this is the original CD here. So, really strange album cover. The odd part is I had like about seven of these shirts with this pig on it. Somebody was selling them on clearance for like $2 and I bought them all. Dude, I don't know. I have no answers. So how in the hell did this album sell? It didn't sell well. It did debut at number four on Billboard, which beat the Karabi album. It did not do good in England. It was at 80. It was UK rock albums that came in at 8. Far as the singles, Afraid did make it to 10 on the mainstream charts, and Beauty made it to 37 on mainstream charts, and that's it. So there wasn't any real hit single from the album. They claim it's gone gold with 50,000 sold, but I've been told it sold about 300,000 copies, but they went ahead and called it gold, which I would believe. Now, reviews and ratings for this thing are usually pretty poor because people wanted it to sound like 1980 Vince Neil Motley Crue. It does not. It's way different than the 1994 Karabi album. It is definitely an experiment. So the tour. So they did some cool stuff on the tour here. I'm going to pull this up so I don't get it wrong. They did what they were called live swine listening parties. And they did do one in Dallas and I was there for it. And I thought it was cool. I did. It was cool to hear the album in its entirety. And my dumb self, being the Motley Crue fan, was like, this is what's going to bring him back. You know, okay, I love John Corabi and I look forward to him in Union, but this is going to bring the crew back. I was wrong. I was wrong. So the tour was called Motley Crue versus the Earth Tour. Yeah, they dropped the whole Generation Swine and the Pig thing by then. I remember that they had Cheap Trick opening for him, and I don't even know who the third band was because I got there late for some reason. Not a big Cheap Trick fan. That's just not my era of music. They played at the Starplex in Dallas, and from what I remember, it was pretty crowded. But then again, when I went and saw Karabi at Starplex, it was pretty crowded too. So back then, KGL used to promote the shit out of concerts, so we used to have good turnouts for about everything in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Sort of a short tour. They played Japan, but I don't think they went to Europe for it at all. Then that was that. That was that. That was about it on that. Typical set list for this. They opened the show with that song Find Myself, which was the opener of Generation Swine, which again, I thought was sort of a cool opener. They played more of the traditional crew stuff they did not do with Karabi, like Girls, 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 and Wildside, Looks That Kill. They played Glitter live, which I don't hate that song. It's just not a Motley song. I know they did Afraid. I think they did Generation Swine, and the worst part is they actually played that stupid Brandon song. I think at this point, Tommy was the celebrity. He was married to Pamela Anderson, and they had to keep Tommy happy, or he might have quit the band, so I think it was more satisfy Tommy Lee at this point more than anything else. So, Generation Swine. Where do I put this amongst the Motley Crue catalog? I hate parts of it. I love other parts of it. When it came out, I was into the album. Thought it was cool. Was glad it was different and modern because I did not want a 1980s Motley Crue album. That was me. That might have been everybody else. Not me. Didn't get it. Still think if Karabi had stayed, this album would have been better. I really do. But that's not the way things worked. Vince fucking deserved an award for sounding as good as he did in the studio on this album. He pulled it off. He really did. Tommy, Mick missing, definitely could tell. So on a scale of 1 to 5, how many pig heads would I give Generation Swine? I really can't give this a 3. I think I got to give it a 2.75. There's some really good songs on it, and there's some really shit songs on it. And I think the swine outweighs the good. So That's about all I'm going to say about Generation Swine. This would be the last time you would see the four of these guys together for a long time, because Tommy would end up quitting the band and stay gone until they had their reunion tour in like 2005. We'll get into that at another time. But that's all I've got on Generation Swine. I would say give it a listen if you're a Motley Crue fan, just to see what the experiment sounded like. There's some good stuff in it, and there's some shit. That song, Brandon, oh, God help me. Brett, don't play snippets from Brandon, whatever you do. Don't do it. You'll lose every listener you got, Bubba. All six of us. All right, everybody. I'm going to wrap it up with that. Check us out on the social media accounts. We're on X. We're on Facebook. We have our Facebook group, The Evil Ones. There's a lot of good conversations going on in there. Subscribe to YouTube if you haven't already. Of course, I'm the one that pushes YouTube more than I do the podcast part, but that's just because I'm a whatever, I'm a dingler. I can't even think of what I am. It's just the way it is, folks. I think it's because I like listening to stuff on YouTube instead of the podcast stuff. That's just me. So I push the YouTube. But we are on every podcast format that exists. So check us out on Podcast World 2, please. And give us some reviews. Brett's got contests coming up soon, so keep a lookout for that. And that is it for this Wednesday or Thursday, whatever night this gets put out. We'll be back with the big show on Sunday. And I think we're going to do sort of a weird movie that may or may not work out. So I might change my mind before then. So I'm not going to give anything away. You'll find out Sunday. And that's all I got. Have a good Easter, even though we'll be putting a show out Easter Sunday night. I will be having an Easter egg hunt on Saturday. So it will be in the Count Krabby haunted house. So wish me luck with all the kids. I'm Carl Todd, and stay evil, everybody. Yeah.
do the dance of the curse.